Welcome to the Brilliant Business Moms Podcast, episode 74, with Sarah Kornack and Beth Ann Schwamberger. Today on the show, we're talking with Jessica Fisher. She has two blogs, Life as Mom and Good Cheap Eats. She's also a cookbook author. And on today's show, we really dig into the ins and outs of becoming a cookbook author. It's lots of fun, so let's get started.
You're listening to the Brilliant Business Moms Podcast, practical business advice for startup moms.
Today on the podcast, we are pleased to welcome Jessica Fisher. Jessica blogs at Life as Mom and Good Cheap Eats, and is the author of three cookbooks and four ebooks. She lives with her husband and six children in California. Welcome to the show, Jessica.
Thank you. So, Jessica, can you tell us a little bit more about how you got started in the blogging world and this world of being a cookbook author?
Oh, that's a really, there's a really long answer. We may go beyond. You know, I started freelance writing almost 9 years ago, and it was just on a whim that I submitted an article to a local parenting publication, and the publisher told me about what's called the Parenting Publications of America, which is an organization of those small little local magazines that you might find at your doctor's office or Walmart, that kind of venue. So I started writing for them, and it was just play money. And then about a year later, we realized we weren't really good with our spending habits, and we wanted to get out of debt. And so I started to ramp up my writing, submitting to more and more publications, just scanning online what writer jobs were available. And let me think. So that was 2007, and that was really the early days of blogging. And all on these writing websites, I kept hearing about blogging as an opportunity. And I was like, well, what's that about? And I think in the early days, it was, you know, sites like about.com. And I had applied for a topic there, and they paid really, really well back in those days, and didn't get the job, but decided, okay, I'm going to figure this out, and happened to live in the same town at the time as Crystal Payne from Money Saving Mom, and we had met for coffee, and she was telling me a little bit about blogging, and I was like, oh, you know, and so it was 2008 that I started Life as Mom. And then in 2009, started Good Cheap Eats. And I'd always had this nagging, I want to write a cookbook. I want to write a freezer cookbook. And then I spoke with Erin Chase, who is the $5 dinner mom. And she had given me some advice about how to write a book proposal. I used the same book that she did, which is by Elizabeth Lyon. And I can't remember the name, but it's something about how to write a nonfiction book proposal and get it published or something like that. And so I did that, and thanks to Erin, got hooked up with an agent, and within a couple of weeks we had sold the freezer book to a publisher. So that's a really long story in a nutshell.
You did a great job of summing it up. And
there's lots of other little rabbit trails that could have gone down, and I avoided. So
I'm sure. That's super exciting, too, that you got your book proposal accepted so quickly.
Well, it didn't. The low point in the story, which I kind of bypassed, was that an editor, before I got an agent, an editor had agreed to look at it, and he ripped it to shreds. Two shreds, and it was probably the most disappointing moment of my writing career. I mean, I just remember sobbing, and I could hardly talk about it. And it took me a couple of weeks before I told Erin, yeah, he just totally ripped that one up. And she's like, get up and try again, you know. And so after that, my agent cleaned up the proposal just a little bit, had me change a few words and title and stuff like that. And then it did sell very quickly once I had an agent and she was pitching it to a dozen different publishers. But that first little rejection was a big bummer.
So how long had you been doing your blog about cooking before you got the agent and got in touch? Like, so how many years were you actively doing recipes and cooking on your blogs?
Well, I started blogging, not personal blogging, but public blogging in 2008. And we signed the contract in 2010. And the first book came out in 2012.
Okay. Do you think that the fact that you had the blog that was focused on a lot to do with cooking, was that helpful in getting your book idea published, do you think?
Yes. Nowadays, part of the reason I think that we see so many bloggers producing cookbooks is that they already have a platform to market the book to. My husband played in bands, you know, as a teenager and an adult, and the bands that got the radio were the ones who were selling out the clubs week after week after week. So it's a really similar concept that if there's a blog that has a lot of traffic, that has a lot of followers, then you already know you have a fan base, quote unquote, to market to. And so that definitely, I think, helps you leverage yourself in selling a book proposal.
Definitely. Sorry. Oh, my voice got all scratchy. Well, they cut me. I don't know what happened. I don't even have a cold.
Yeah, I gave you mine over the air.
Oh, no.
That'd be scary. More and more germs we could catch. We don't need more germs.
Really. Talk about going viral, huh?
Yeah. That would be crazy. Oh, okay. So do you have any advice or, and maybe your advice would be different because now is obviously a different time than when you grew your blog several years ago, but do you have maybe some of those best strategies that you use to grow that audience and build that platform?
You know, I've really seen those things change over time. Having a big blog share a link to your site sometimes generates a lot of traffic and new followers, and sometimes it doesn't at all. So it used to be in the early days, if a high-profile blog had featured you in some way or you had a guest post, then you could count on like a record traffic day. And I don't really see that same phenomenon happening. For me, currently, it's kind of hit or miss. Sometimes something that I don't expect to be really popular is, and something that I put a lot of effort into isn't. So I kind of accidental these days for me.
You have two blogs that you're posting to, and you post every day. So how do you come up with so much content?
I have a problem of too many ideas, not enough time. When I first started Life as Mom, I was posting 3 times a day.
Wow.
Yeah. 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 I was, and for some reason it was, the ideas just came. It's like I had like this storehouse of ideas in my head. So that part isn't hard. My brain kind of doesn't shut off sometimes. So I have pages and pages of notes of things that I think would be helpful to people, but oh, I don't have pictures, and that would take an afternoon to make those pictures, or I just don't have time to put this idea on paper kind of thing. So because what I write is about home and family and food, and that's my everyday, then the lines are really blurry, but the content ideas are high.
And do you have any sort of editorial calendar to kind of, when you have all these ideas, it kind of helps you plan out what you'll post and when?
I use Google Calendar. That's kind of my, like when Google's down, that really stinks because a lot of the ideas, I just type them in and then I drag and drop them if I don't get to it, if I don't have the resources to make it happen. And I share that with my sister who kind of helps me on the back end with stuff. So that's a communication tool that we both use. And I like the drag and drop. So that's really where I put a lot of ideas. But then I just have notebooks where I start writing stuff down, and I have stacks of notebooks, so.
Do you go through the notebooks then every so often to kind of cross off ideas you no longer like? And
Yeah. Finally, when I clean out my office like once a month, it's like, oh, yeah, forgot about that. But again, it's really just the time crunch is probably the biggest thing, and I'm just feeling, even though my kids are all potty trained and able to feed themselves and very independent, a friend told me about 4 or 5 years ago, she said, your kids are going to need you more, not less. And I didn't really believe her because I thought, well, gee, once I get done with the diapers, it's going to be really easy, right? And that is not the case. It has definitely become, there have been more different things that I need to give my attention to at home. And so my time for work is, it's a hard thing to juggle.
when do you normally find the time to work on your blogs and your content? I know you are homeschooling, and you do have a wide age range of children, and I know you're always talking about hockey practices and stuff on your blog. So
I can count on not being interrupted if I wake up really early or stay up really late, but I can't do both. So I've been shooting for, I used to be able to do both. I mean, I would in the early years of blogging, I would stay up till 1 because it was the first time all day that the house had been totally quiet and I wasn't needed. And I was going to be up with the baby anyways, so why not? But now it's just trying to go to bed early and trying to wake up early is kind of my strategy now.
Could you walk us through some of the process of writing a cookbook? That sounds extremely time-consuming with all the testing of recipes that you would have to do. So what does that process look like?
Well, I keep more notebooks in the kitchen. I have notebooks everywhere. And so as I'm making stuff, I take notes and then I write down what my family thought of it, changes that they suggest that I make to make it better. And then I go through that process again. I usually do everything on paper. I'm writing it by hand, not on the computer kind of thing. And then I worry that my house is going to burn down in the night because I don't have it backed up anywhere. I have seriously locked drafts in a fireproof safe when we leave town, or when it's gotten to the end before I've started transferring it to the computer, I'll leave the binder by the front door at night kind of thing, where it's like, there's too much here to lose. And so it's probably not a wise strategy, but that's just how I've operated in the past. And then I start transferring it to the computer, writing the head notes and things like that. And then it goes to the editorial director, who reads through it and then passes it on to a line editor. And she looks at content and style and consistency throughout the recipes. And you'd kind of be surprised. There's a lot of editing to make it be very consistent throughout. Are we talking about, what size can is this? Or, do you mean toasted sesame oil? Or do you mean, I can't even remember what the other kind was. She asked me these different kinds of questions. I was like, oh, didn't know there was a difference. And and living in Southern California, we have a certain vocabulary and marketing terms for certain ingredients that are not universal throughout the states. So there's some verbiage that needs to be changed. I want to say green onions. They want to say scallions, different things like that to make it adaptable for anybody wherever they live. So we go back and forth 2 or 3 times with that. And then it goes to a copy editor who gets into more nitty gritty details. And we go back and forth 2 or 3 times. And then it goes to the designer who lays it all out. And then if a recipe is too long for the page, if my head notes are too long, then, you have to, because you don't want to use a new page for just 2 sentences. So it involves a lot of editing that way, matching up pictures and making sure that they go with the right recipes, proofing the whole thing to make sure that nothing got lost in the copy and paste. And so then we go through the first pages probably twice, and then it goes to the printer, and then you wait 6 months and then it comes out in the stores.
That is a long process.
It is. It is. It's about a year of my life. At least. Yeah.
Poured into that cookbook. I was curious too with the cookbook. Does the publisher take the photos of the food, or is that something that you as the author do?
It really depends on what you're able to do and what your contract says. Okay. Traditionally, cookbook authors have not taken their own pictures, and the author is traditionally responsible for paying for half the cost of photography. And there's debate about whether or not having pictures really sells the book or not. I've heard lots of different arguments from lots of different venues, whether or not that really, if the extra cost involved really sells more books or not. But now that food bloggers are able to develop the recipes as well as take their pictures, then you're seeing it more commonly done that the food blogger might take their own pictures. So it just really depends. I took the pictures for Good Cheap Eats as well as the next book, but the first 2 books, they hired professional photographers to do that.
Very interesting.
Jessica, do you have any tips for that new food blogger who is interested in publishing a cookbook, a tip to get them started down that path?
I think that having an agent, at least in my experience, has been really key. And I don't say that lightly because we're kind of DIY people. And when we sold our house in Kansas City, we did for sale by owner. So to hire a professional and to share a portion of the profits, I would try to do it if I could by myself. But I think having my agent was really helpful. She already had the connections. She already had a audience with a group of editors that she was able to bounce the idea off of. And there have been times when there were things I had no clue about, like the author being responsible for pictures. I was like, oh, I didn't know that. You know, so she was able to just negotiate certain terms that I just wouldn't have known. And so I think not only can a good agent protect your interests and make sure that your voice is being heard, but they also have those connections to get you a possible book deal in the first place. And I'm not one of those people that, oh, I got an email from a publisher who wants to publish my book. You know, I heard about those stories, but that wasn't me. So I really had to make a point to go search them out, not the other way around.
And how did you land on your agent?
Erin Chase and I have the same agent, and so she had referred me to her.
Okay, great. So all along the way, those personal connections then made a big difference.
They did, yeah. Erin was a wealth of information and assistance in that, definitely.
So Jessica, through your two blogs, all the cookbooks you've written, everything you've done, what would you say is the one accomplishment in your business that you're most proud of?
I would say there's a couple different things that definitely strike me. I think becoming a cookbook author, something that I'd dreamed of since high school or even earlier, was a huge achievement. I come from a long line of passionate home cooks. My grandmother was always winning awards at the fair. So having someone recognize my recipe development in a tangible way has been very encouraging. My grandmother passed away 14 years ago, so she missed out on the whole phenomenon, but I think she would be really excited.
That's incredible. I love that. I didn't realize that you came from that family tradition, and so it sounds like you were in the kitchen from kind of a young age.
Yeah, especially with my Grandma John. She grew up on a farm in Minnesota and lived in Minnesota her whole life, but she would come to California for a couple months at a time with my grandfather, and my mom was happy to let her have free reign in the kitchen, so I would just hang out with her. And she specialized in baking. That's what we did most often, was baking things together. So, yeah, I miss her a lot.
Are you able to tell us what your fourth cookbook will be about, or is that a secret right now?
I have not been given the green light, so I will say no.
Well, I would like to say I have two of your cookbooks. I've only done one recipe in Good Cheap Eats so far, but the freezer cookbook, I love that cookbook. I use it all the time. The chicken divan recipe that you have in that, my kids love it, and I love it because it's good for them. So mm-hmm. That one all the time. And I just gave that book as a gift to my friend. You put out fantastic cookbooks, so I can't wait to see what the fourth one is.
Thanks.
We've heard from so many moms, too, that freezer cooking is a way that they are able to get more done. So it's something that I haven't done a ton with, but maybe, Sarah, next year you can get me the freezer cookbook for Christmas, and then I'll be on my way.
Oh, Mother's Day.
If I draw your name.
Mother's Day is sooner, so.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
That's right.
Now that your kids are getting a little bit older, do they help you in the kitchen, or are you passing on any of your cooking skills and things like that to them?
I think it's safe to say that every single one of them loves to cook, and I need to cut them loose a little more often, because they really want to. And I think part of it's just lack of preparation on my part to be able to just say to the little ones, here, go do that. But the other night I had a homemade brownie mix in the pantry. And I said, here, you guys can get out the recipe and go make it. And so they're 10, 8, and 6, and the three of them made brownies, and they were great. So my older kids, I can just hand them the cookbook and say, go make this. But there are, you know, certain strategies that I think I need to be a little more proactive and intentional in teaching them. So I, again, that's something in my notebook, a huge list of, okay, this is what our cooking class at home could be. And so they all love to cook and they're all capable of doing many different things and they want to know more. And so I want to carve out that time and make that a bigger priority because they're willing and ready. And I know that that season could fade away if I don't take advantage of it.
That's so exciting that they all are following in your footsteps in that way. That's really fun.
Yeah, my 8-year-old daughter loves YouTube and she watches lots of cooking things. And I remember the other day she told me, yeah, you know, when you bake a cake, if you press the middle of it and it springs back, then it's done. Or if you stick a toothpick in it and it has just a few crumbs, it's done. I'm like, where did you learn that? She's like, oh, from such and such a YouTube video. It's like, you're supposed to learn that from me. How come I haven't told you that? But, you know, however they get the information, I guess is good. I just was kind of a gentle reminder that I want her to learn it from me too. So
that's cute. So Jessica, do you have either a favorite online tool or program or something that just really has helped your business either to stay organized or has helped you to grow in some way?
I think just Google in general. I use Gmail, Google Calendar, Drive, Analytics, and of course the search engine. I appreciate that it's free and I use all of those probably all day long in some way. And my only gripe about it is that they got rid of Reader because I really loved that. But yeah, the Google products, I'm a fan.
I know you read a lot as well. Do you have a favorite business book that you've turned to over the years?
I have really enjoyed the books by Murray Giuliano, whichever one is not the former mayor of New York. That's her last name. I always get that mixed up. She wrote the French Women Don't Get Fat series, but she also wrote Women Work in the Art of Savoir-Faire. And she was a VP or CEO of Veuve Clicquot, which is a champagne brand from France. And she was their American, she's French, but she was a head of their American department for a really, really long time. And she just has some really great tips about business and about how you interact business-wise that for me, I was a teacher and then I was a stay-at-home mom. So that was never part of my training. You know, how do you dress for a business dinner? How do you act if you're hosting the dinner? You know, certain things like that, etiquette-wise and things like that. I've really learned a lot from that book. And because she's French, I kind of understand some of her little quirks, having been an exchange student in France. So I like her. I enjoy reading her books. But that particular book has really helped me. Like when I think about business books, that one stands out in my mind.
Great. I'm really curious now. I'll have to check it out. Well, speaking of, okay, you had me curious when you mentioned, too, her other book, French Women Don't Get Fat. And I know Sarah was curious about this question, too. With all of the cooking that you do all the time, how do you stay trim? How do you stay in shape?
Well, I don't feel like I am because I just went dress shopping yesterday. My first cookbook, I gained 15 pounds, and that was very surprising and humbling, and wow, how did that happen? And part of it was that it was right as I was starting to turn 40, so there could have been other things at play in that. So I don't really have a secret, except that I lost 6 pounds when we went to France and lived in, we went to France in October and I lost 6 pounds that month. And I had croissants every morning and cookies every afternoon and all the wine and cheese that I wanted. So I think there is a key to eating the French way. I think part of it has to do with variety and making sure that everything you're eating, that a meal has a lot of variety because you feel more satiated if you're not just eating like a chicken pot pie without a lot of other flavors and textures. I think that that is part of the key. And that's what she explores in the books, is that the first three, she says the first three bites are the best anyways. So if you can limit yourself to three bites of everything and you're getting a lot of different flavors and textures, that's a way for you feel like you don't have to keep eating until you feel full because you've already been satisfied.
I did read that book, The French Women Don't Get Fat book. It was good. It was really interesting. It totally made me want to go live in France.
Yeah.
It just seems so.
Yeah.
It was a good read.
The French, when it comes to food, are very thoughtful and deliberate. So it definitely is part of the culture that you would think it through and have the whole meal. And they think of every angle in terms of, you know, how the foods and drinks will combine. And I mean, I think that's just something, it's inherent in their culture.
Where Americans are just thinking about how much they can shovel in.
And how fast it can be done and what's the next thing and moving on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Jessica, it's been so much fun chatting with you today and learning about the ins and outs of writing a cookbook and everything else you've been doing. But we'd love to end with either something funny, or I guess your kids are a little bit older, so I don't know how cute they are these days, but just a fun mom moment that's happened recently.
Well, I've been working really hard to change our diet over the last 4 or 5 years, and talking with the kids and when I read a book that has really made me think, for example, like Salt, Sugar, Fat, talks about our American food system and the ingredients that have been developed in order to satisfy the American palate and how that may or may not be good for us. My three oldest boys read that book with me last year. And so it's been an ongoing conversation in our family about how can we eat better? How can we enjoy healthier foods that still taste great, that aren't super expensive? And that's kind of what's been guiding my menu planning for the last few years. And so the other day we took the whole family to see The Hobbit, and the little kids had said, can I bring $5 to spend for popcorn? And we said, sure, because at the movie theater, $5 doesn't go very far. So we figured they'd have to like pool their money to get like one pot of popcorn, right? And turned out to be bargain day. So all the popcorn, sodas, and candy were $2 a piece. And so they could load up. And if they pulled their money, they could load up even more. And so they did. And I was kind of surprised because some of them chose to buy two huge, you know, their movie theater candy, right? So they're buying two huge things. And we had already told them they could spend the $5 and it was their money. And so whatever, we don't do this very often. I think one person got popcorn and soda, but most of them were going for the sugar. And my 17-year-old said to me the next day, and he had abstained from buying anything, and he said, next time, can you limit them to just $2? Because it made me really sad watching them eat all that junk food.
Aww.
And I just thought that was really sweet, and he'll probably be totally embarrassed that I shared that if he knew. But that just really, he's very nutrition-minded, and he eats better than any of us because he makes his own smoothies and makes his own breakfast and things like that. And that just really touched my heart that here he's accepted to college. He's about to go off into the world. And the thing that has been really important to me for the last couple years, he totally gets even more than I do. And it was just really sweet that he was looking out for their well-being. And even though it's like maybe a once in a year thing, I just thought that was really, really sweet of him that he cared.
Definitely. I think that those are the moments where you know, okay, it's working. Something
right.
that I'm teaching is sinking in here. So
exactly. Exactly.
Well, thank you so much for talking with us today, Jessica. Could you tell our listeners where they can find you online?
Sure. I talk about how to make the most of what you have, whether that's time with your kids or your budget or your time in general, at lifeismom.com. And I talk about how to eat well, meaning tasty as well as healthy, on a budget at goodcheapeats.com.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Wow. Writing a cookbook sounds like so much work, but I am so glad we got to hear about the entire process today from Jessica Fisher. And I also do truly recommend her freezer cooking cookbook. We'll go ahead and link to it in the show notes because I do own it and I do use it all the time. freezer cooking is a great way to save time in the kitchen. And I know we are all looking for ways to save some time. And so I can't recommend freezer cooking enough and her cookbook as a guide. So if you're looking for those show notes, just head to brilliantbusinessmoms.com/74 and you'll get all of the show notes and links to anything that we talked about in the episode. I've actually been following Jessica's blogs for many years now, and so I was absolutely thrilled that she agreed to be interviewed on our podcast. It's such a cool thing to actually be able to talk to these talented women and learn more about them and learn all of their tips and tricks and their best advice for us. I hope you're enjoying all of that too and soaking up all of the great information. Now it's your turn to head out there and be brilliant.